Welcome to Burning River Radio. I'm your host, Joe Koblitz, and I am joined, I guess as always from now on, by...
Yes.
Michelle Miller-Ragno.
Hey, I don't play for the Twins. I have a boy's name.
We're going to start off the show with the joke we ended last week's show on, just in case you missed it.
Yes.
So we're at... We're at the third week of camp, fourth week of camp. How far are we in this thing?
I think fans and players have both lost track. I think everybody's ready for. Yeah, I think everybody's ready for
the. This is the fourth week of spring training. We got 1 week left. The Indians are going to play through Sunday at Goodyear, and then they're going to play two at Chase, and then I don't have the 28. I have the 2017 schedule for some reason, but then they're going to start things up the regular season. The thing is, normally this is a really fun roster talk time, but like we've been saying the whole time, most mm-hmm. of the roster was worked out a long time ago, and now it looks like Michael Brantley may be ready for opening day.
Yep.
So that changes mm-hmm. some things. I personally watched him play yesterday. It was a little weird. He played left field, and they used a DH for him. So, Chuck, I can't say his name, Scolomiero. It was
one of those games. Yeah, one of those really crazy Italian names.
Yeah, so they used Chuck Scolomiero, I'm going to call him. It's Scolamiero. Mm-hmm. And his real name is Clark, not Chuck. He was DHing for Brantley, which is funny because the day before, Brantley had 5 at-bats in, like, 2 innings.
Mm-hmm.
He hit twice in each inning for the Indians, then he hit once for the other team.
Right.
So they really pushed him the one day, and then yesterday he was off. And Corey Kluber was the starting pitcher on this single-A team,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which was a fun day for the White Sox.
got
a bunch of single-A White Sox, and they jump in there against the two-time Cy Young Award winner. But they did all right. They got like 4 hits off of him.
Yeah, what about this heckler that was behind the plate screaming at him to throw strikes?
I believe it was one of the Indians' coaches.
Ah.
And they were just goofing on him.
Gotcha. Okay.
I was
thinking it was Marlins, man.
No, and it wasn't Jason Kipnis this year. In previous seasons, I remember Jason Kipnis getting back there and yelling at him. I did see mm-hmm. Jason Kipnis. He grabbed a foul ball during the minor league game because he was in the gym. Working out, which is now right next to the field that they play minor league games on. And so he grabs a foul ball that had went beyond the fence that fans are allowed to go, and he tosses it over to this kid with a glove, and the kid drops the ball, and he's like, "You got to make that play, man. Come on." Like an 8-year-old kid. So that was good.
Yeah.
Sexy man, that Jason Kipnis.
Well, let's see. Sexiness for me on the baseball field is solely determined based on performance. So although Jason Kipnis has been sexy in the past, he didn't really show that sexiness or swag last season. And hopefully he shows it this season.
Well, you know what? As far as Kipnis goes, I'm going to go 100% on the healthy, not healthy thing. And he looks really healthy now, and he's just been crushing it.
Yeah.
Here. So well, I'm not going to – I hate – these guys who just give up on a player because he has 1 down year. Kipnis has had 2 down years his entire career. Mm. He's been an all-star. He's generally been a fantastic player. He is an average defender at least. He's above average at balls hit at him. He never makes throwing errors, which I think is a plus.
Yeah. He's been average, but I think we should give him a lot of credit because he was well below average when he first came into the league as a second baseman. And then if you look at all the advanced fielding metrics, he's actually improved to the point where he was actually an above replacement fielder at second base in 2016, obviously before he got hurt.
Yeah,
so I think we should give Kipnis more credit for improving defensively.
Yeah. And most of the problems he's had are because of the injuries. And I do think he's ready to go 100%. So that's why we've talked last year, even, I guess it would be me and Justin at the time, But we talked in the playoffs about how I hated them putting him in the outfield, especially center field. It's like, okay, the guy can't run. Let's throw him out in center field. But I hated that because the Indians are best with Jose Ramirez at third base. They don't have another third baseman. You have to look at it not that Jose has more value at second, which he does. You have to look at it that it's either Kipnis playing second and Jose at third, or it's Jose at second and Yandy Diaz or Giovanni Ursula at third. So you're replacing Kipnis with Ursula or Diaz. That's the only thing you'd look at there, and that's obviously a downgrade.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the emphasis on defense, especially the last couple seasons, has really not been where it once was, simply because of, you know, launch angles and the fact that Indians pitchers just simply miss bats. That's why Kipnis was placed in center, which is to try to get some offense, more offense into a lineup that, didn't lack it, but, I mean, adding any
it
offense.
It did in the playoffs.
Well, it certainly did in the playoffs. Kipnis is more valuable to this team than probably anybody that they would have traded him for, even a reliever, another starter, or another outfielder. And to be honest with you, I think, you know, Kipnis's future, if it's with the Indians, which, you know, it depends on what type of season he has this year, but if it's with the Indians moving forward, I think it's going to be out in the outfield if he has a future in this team.
I don't really. He's signed through 2020, so I think he has a future with the team. I would say all the guys that are coming up, even guys I was once high on, and we've moved more towards the minor league side in our talking points. And like I was really high on Tyler Krieger from the moment they drafted him and thinking that's going to be the future, and now I'm not quite as high on him. Eric Stametz I like, but I don't see him as an MLB starter. Eric Gonzalez is definitely not an MLB starter. So I don't know that they have a guy at second base. Maybe Mark Mathias if he can come back and have a full healthy season. But I don't know that they have another guy at second base who's amazing. And I think for at least for the next 3 years, this is probably going to be the best defensive configuration is Kipnis at second. And Ramirez at third.
Yeah. Well, before we get to another outfielder that might be making a return by opening day, one more thought on Kipnis, at least for me. Another reason why, of course, Kipnis having a magnificent comeback season would be good for the Indians in 2018. I mean, I don't want to get, you know, away from that point at all. But I do want to mention that him having a comeback season offensively and defensively showing that he can stay healthy and the fact that he signed through 2020 makes him a much more valuable trade chip in this offseason than this past offseason, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
now,
he has a good season.
The Indians are going to be losing, obviously. I mean, it's going to be really hard for them to keep Miller and Allen. I mean, they might be able to keep one, maybe, but the Indians have never historically never been a team that gave relievers long-term deals. But they'll have that trade piece in Jason Kipnis playing at a prime position, second base, power at second base. The Indians might be looking for a closer this offseason, so we'll wait and see. But I mean, so I'm rooting for Kipnis selfishly for a lot of different reasons.
I want to talk about the one battle that is real and is legitimate. It's a legitimate battle because whoever loses this battle is gone. And I think that makes it much more different. And somebody brought up the other day before Melvin Upton was cut a couple days ago, along with Ryan Hannigan. So they're gone off the roster completely. Whereas when we say cut for a minor leaguer, it just means they've been sent to AAA. I use cut both ways, so I think it's confusing for some people to get mad at me. But somebody was talking about how they wish they would keep Melvin Upton and start him in left field or as a bench outfielder to start the season, because you could put Greg Allen in AAA, and that's fine. You could put Tyler Naquin in AAA, and that's fine. Like you don't lose anything from doing that. Whereas if you cut Upton like they did, now he's lost. Now I personally am fine with them cutting Upton because I don't think he was going to be worth anything. He was very uninspired when I saw him this year, and his numbers from the last couple of years are just terrible. So, like, to me, that's no loss. But the guys, now that we're looking at, there's three guys in particular in the middle infield spots who can play infield and outfield, some of them. It depends on who you're looking at. But Rob Ruff Snyder is an interesting name. Giovanni Ursula and Eric Gonzalez. And now there may be one spot, there may be two spots. But they just sent Eric Stametz and Yadier Diaz to AAA. Mm-hmm. So they are out of this consideration. They sent Brandon Barnes to AAA, so he's out of the outfield consideration. So we're really looking at those three guys as far as that utility spot. Now, when I've seen them play, they've had Ruff Snyder almost exclusively in the outfield, and I was under the impression he was a shortstop. So they may be trying to work him in both ways, and I've seen Gonzalez play almost exclusively infield when I've seen him working out, where he was working out in right field last year a lot. So I think that definitely enters into it. If you have two utility infielders, you definitely want one of them to be able to also play the outfield just in case.
Right.
And I think we've probably talked about this before, but do you have a favorite among the three? Let's say you can only keep one of Ruff Snyder, Ursula, and Gonzalez, and the other two are gone because you got to put them on waivers and someone's going to take them.
Mm-hmm.
So who's the one that you keep and the two, you know, leaving the other two to die?
Yeah. I think for me, the choice is Eric Gonzalez only because he's got, in my estimation, he's got a higher ceiling offensively. So that's why I would go with Eric Gonzalez personally. And
yeah, see that.
I just think he can really, if he played every day, I think he would be considered. I mean, his range is off the charts. I think he'd be considered one of the best. He would be considered one of the best defensive shortstops or third basemen if he played every day.
He has a wild arm, though.
Yeah, he does.
So
that can be tamed.
While he can get to the balls, I wouldn't want him starting every day because of that. I mean, starting every once in a while is fine, and I kind of like him in right field because of it. And, of course, my choice is the same as yours. I've been on Gonzalez for a long time. Years ago, when he was in the lower minors, I was like, this guy's perfect for utility man in the majors. I never thought he was going to start, but I've always liked him as a utility guy. And I really like him. The reason I like him as a utility guy is you know he's not going to start every day. So you want a guy who can, one thing, play every position on the diamond, which he can. He came up as a first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he can play literally every position on the diamond except pitcher and catcher.
Yeah.
And you want a guy who can run the bases. You don't need a pinch hitter necessarily out of this spot. You have so many other hitters. You've got Alonso and Brantley and Encarnacion who already can't move, and all they do is hit. So you've got these guys who cannot, you know, they can't move, but they can hit. You need some people who can do the other parts of the game, like play defense and run the bases, and Ursula is not going to be your base stealer.
No.
So it's one thing maybe if Greg Allen is the fourth outfielder, then you've got a base stealer in Allen, but it's nice to have that other runner off the bench.
Yeah. He's not going to be a base stealer, and he's not going to be much of a off-the-bench, late-inning pinch-hit threat either.
Well, you can't pinch-hit him, and his greatest asset is his glove at third base, but he's not that much better than Jose Ramirez.
Defensively, he's not.
Yeah, I'm saying, yeah. So he is he is better, but he's not that much better, and Jose is going to play 155 games this year, assuming everything goes well.
Yeah.
So there's just no room for him. I'm sorry. I like the guy. I appreciate what he does, but this isn't the 2006 Twins with Doug Minkiewicz playing first base. You know, they can't afford to just throw away the offense and have a guy like that on this roster. It doesn't make any sense.
No. You know, the Twins are really dumb putting a defensive only person at first base.
Oh, I'm reading Jay Jaffe's Cooperstown casebook right now, and I just read the David Ortiz one, and he was talking about how stupid they were because they put defense only first baseman. That was who they chose. It was either keep Ortiz or put Mankiewicz at first base, and they released David Ortiz.
Yeah.
So that they could keep Mankiewicz there.
I just called the Twins stupid, but here's the thing. At the time, defense was rated a little higher on the spectrum of new age stat metrics. Because I think his last name is Duwan. John Derwin, maybe?
I don't know all your
friends. He released the Fielder's Bible. And for a while, that was kind of like the next adaptation of Moneyball, was, you know, how to objectify defensive metrics. And so he kind of was laying the groundwork for what we have now, obviously, before.
We need to stop the objectification of baseball players.
Yeah. Did I misspeak there? Objectify?
No, I'm just making a stupid PC joke.
Ah, okay. Anyway, let's not talk about the Twins. I mean, the Twins, you know, they got a nice team this year, but whatever.
I talk about the Twins all the time.
Yeah.
I said yesterday to somebody that I think the Twins are probably, they have to be the favorite to be second.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know that there's a division more primed for one team to win in all of baseball than the AL Central right now.
Yeah.
It's just, and that's why, like, this is such paltry discussions of who's going to be the, you know, utility man or the eighth man in the bullpen or the, you know, the 15th outfielder. It doesn't even matter because they could cut Ruff Snyder, Ursel, and Naquin, Almonte, Barnes, they could cut all these guys tomorrow, and they might have a hard time fielding a team in Columbus, but it's not going to affect the Major League squad one bit.
No, it won't. And here's the other thing, too. We didn't talk about him in this equation, obviously, and that's Brandon Guyer. Brandon Guyer, in my opinion, was one of the most missed players who was injured going into the postseason last year because they needed him off the bench. And he is such a great pinch hitter off the bench from the right side. Now, this is going to get interesting because...
But he was terrible last year.
He was awful.
He was very possibly the worst hitter on the Indians team last year. And they signed him to that extension prior to the season, so you kind of have to hold on to him. But if he's not able to break camp with the team because of the wrist thing or whatever, it's not. I'd rather him get healthy because I do think he could be a devastating force from the right side of the plate, which is something the Indians could always use.
Yeah.
But I'd rather see Chisenhall just hit against everybody than an injured Guyer go out there and do the same thing he did last year.
Well, I mean, if Brandon Guyer is ready for opening day, which is – it's questionable.
Well, to me – okay, let's just say this. He hasn't played in a game yet. So we're talking about a week from now being ready. He has not played in a game yet. Well, they played 30 spring training games for a reason. Mm. They don't need 30 games to get ready, but they need at least 20, you know?
Yeah.
So you're just going to go, okay, you're straight from haven't played in a game. I haven't seen him in a minor league game. That doesn't mean he hasn't been there, but I have yet to see him there. I haven't seen him practice. I haven't seen him hit. And what, he's just going to start right now and he's going to be ready? This is the problem that they got into last year with Kipnis and Brantley. You know, early on in the season, they've pushed these guys, and they're like, okay, you haven't practiced at all, you haven't played at all, let's go get 100% in. No, let him be patient. He's not. They don't need him the first week of the year. Let's, even if he's healthy, don't rush him. Let him play in the minors.
Well, they have some off days early on. I think they've got, like, in the month of April, I think they have, like, 7 off days, don't they?
I did look up the schedule, finally. But, Well, they start in March.
Yeah.
Which is all. But they have an off day one day into the season, which they always do, and they have then one day the next day, week, and then they have two in the middle of the month because they're going to Puerto Rico to play the Twins. I think that's still on. I don't think
it's still on.
The hurricane killed that.
No. But I mean, okay, here's, I guess the overarching question is, so if Brantley and Guy aren't ready, then who's going to start, at least start the season and left?
Honestly, I think it would be Tyler Naquin.
Okay. Tyler Naquin in the left, huh?
Because, you're not going to put him in center over Zimmer.
No.
Assuming Zimmer's groin thing was just a whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then,
why has Rajay Davis lasted this far in the camp then?
Well, I think, and that's why I think they cut Melvin Upton, is because Rajay Davis is in camp, and they're like, well, if we're going to have someone who can't hit, let's at least have the guy that everyone loves for being the World Series hero, bringing him back in. I don't want to see Rajay Davis play a single inning for the Indians this year. Because to me, that's, and again, you're talking about if you don't play him, you lose him. But to me, that's no loss at all. I'd much rather see Greg Allen take those innings, or Yandy Diaz, but Diaz has already been sent down to camp. People get too stuck on this. Oh, he's a this position. Like, oh, Ramirez is more comfortable at second, so he should only play at second, and that type of thing. And you just said putting Naquin in left, like, that's a crazy thing. But an outfielder is an outfielder. We've seen guys go from all fields. Very few outfielders get super comfortable and have to play one field. I mean, Brantley plays left because it's easier. He used to be a pretty decent center fielder before he got old. So if he had good legs, you could put him in right, and it's not a big deal. You could put Zimmer in all three outfield positions. I've seen Zimmer play all three outfield positions. So it's not like a freak-out thing. So you should be able to put Naquin in left. So if Yandy Diaz can play right field, then he can play left field for sure, because it's easier. Mm-hmm. In Cleveland, it's easier.
Yeah.
So Rajay Davis could be a left fielder. Any of these guys could be put into left field to take the Brantley spot for the moment. And obviously, Chisenhall's healthy, and as I said, could play against lefties and righties. You don't have to platoon him.
Here's a name, somebody that's still hanging around. What about Greg Allen? Would he be a candidate to start season and left?
Well, that's what I said. I would prefer that. I'm holding out hope that he breaks camp as the fourth outfielder, the bench guy. But I worry, because they brought him up straight from AA last year, if maybe they'll want to see him in AAA this year. Everything I've heard from minor league people, coaches, whatever, people who follow it, AAA is a joke. And there's no detriment to go straight from AA to the majors. I've never heard somebody say, oh, like someone who actually knows. You hear idiots on Twitter say it all the time. Oh, he's never played in AAA. I've never heard, baseball intellectuals say, oh, he needs to play in AAA first.
Yeah.
It's a wash. And if you look, now this year it's going to be a little different. But last year the Indians had, let's see, their starting rotation had Jarrett Groob and I'm trying to think of who else was in that rotation. But it was all these old guys. Travis Banwart was starting games for them. Chris Narvison. Mm-hmm. Those are not MLB talent players. But in AA, you were facing some of the top prospects in all of baseball.
Right.
So I think you're getting a much better experience in AA. So the fact that they brought Mejia up and Allen up straight from AA doesn't necessitate that they have to go back to AAA.
Mm-hmm.
Although they may.
Right. Well, speaking of pitching, do you think we're any closer to finding out who is going to be in the bullpen?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything official on it. I think we've talked about it a few times. I think we both agreed Ryan Merritt should be included.
Yeah.
Then leaves like maybe one open spot. But again, if you want to be wishy-washy and say I don't want to make a decision between Urshela, Ref Snyder, and Gonzalez, then you go with the 7-man pen. You don't put somebody else in that spot, and you take two of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, how many relievers they decide to carry directly impacts the size of the bench too. You know, it's kind of like, all right, so Ryan Merritt's fate still hangs in the balance. And if they opt to keep two additional arms, then the bench shrinks to what, three? So we know that Gomes and Perez will occupy one of those slots, and then the utility battle between Gonzalez and Urshela would take the other. So if Brantley is ready for opening day, which is
that's what I think.
Even though we disagree, judging by history, it indicates that if they feel that he's ready, he will begin.
Well, Brantley
the opening day on the roster. That leaves
games.
Davis, Russ Snyder, Naquin, Allen, Guyer, what, Napoli. And who am I missing for the final one of the two slots? So,
well, there's a few guys still in camp, like Drew Maggie and Ben Taylor are still in camp.
Maggie, that's right. Yeah.
But they're not actually up for the job.
No, but I mean, it's just the name. So if Brantley opens on the DL, then that creates one additional spot.
I think that it creates two spots. Because if he opens with the team, I doubt he'll be playing every day. So now you need another outfielder who can start in left field.
Yeah.
You're really, like, hurting yourself by doing that. Now you need a platoon partner for Lonnie, or they think they need one at least, and you need a platoon partner for Brantley. So now you need a five-man outfield, and that's going to kill that last bullpen spot.
Here's what I was thinking. So Urshela, he's been battling a hamstring issue, hasn't he? I wonder if the Indians can get creative, and if they put him on the disabled list, they could keep him on their 40 man, correct?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a way to keep Urshela and Gonzalez, right? But
yes,
keep them both is to put him on
for a
disabled
short
list.
Period, but then you would need someone to get hurt or something very quickly to actually use him. I think they'd be much better off trying to trade him. And if not, then you just let him go and it happens. Who cares? I mean, there are so many great defensive players that never make it to Double A because they can't hit.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's made it as far as he is, good for him. And maybe we'll see him in the next World Baseball Classic playing for Colombia. But, you know, it's whatever.
So back to the bullpen, though. I've only been to spring training twice in my life. Okay. So you've been down there. You know the schedules. So, like, are they going to just pitch guys like Allen, Miller, and McAllister, and Otero less in games and then just, you know, have Merritt, Torres, Blyle, Evan Marshall, have these guys just throw the big bulk of the innings moving forward so they have a bigger sample size on these
they
guys?
They might, but I don't think they take any, like, they don't take serious consideration of spring stats. So I think for them, even watching a guy in the bullpen is valuable because you can tell if he's hitting his spots. And like throwing on the backfield is just, you know, pitching without a hitter there. You can see if a guy's hitting his spots and how much the ball's breaking and how hard he's throwing. And you can get that information from there. So they don't necessarily need to pitch in spring game as much as, you know, the fans would like to see them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible that they've already made their decisions and they don't want to make them public because if someone gets hurt between now and then, that will obviously change the decision.
Yeah. But you would think that you would start to see some announcements by this weekend, right? So it would give...
Well, they're going to have to by March 27th.
So you would think that this weekend would be the best time to make those decisions, right?
Yeah, I think they'll make another round of cuts within the next day or two. Today's an off day completely. This is a Tuesday. They had two off days for the entirety of camp, and this is their second one. So there won't be anything going on at all today, and then they'll get back into that last week starting on the 21st. We'll find more there. There's one more thing I want to talk about today. And again, it's going back to AAA. And the way they have been using it and the way I would prefer they use it. And I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about some stuff. I've had some under-the-table talks about this, about how Columbus wants to win rather than just be a farm club for the Indians. They actually want to win games and try to sell tickets, like, as an entertainment venue.
Yeah.
Whereas for the Indians, it would be best if they just housed the best talent for the future. So, like, in previous years, they've really had a lot of these quadruple A guys on the roster. But so many of them hit free agency this year, and then of the guys they signed this year, other than, like, Richie Schaefer, who they brought back, Brandon Barnes, there aren't a whole lot of those older guys that are going to be dumped in Columbus. And when they cut Ryan Hannigan, I thought that was a really good sign. The last few years, the catching in Columbus has been Adam Moore, and last year was Eric Kratz, and, you know, before that it was, what, Guillermo Quiroz, who I saw yesterday. he's the first base coach for the White Sox now, the minor league team. Third base coach was Omar Vizquel. That was kind of cool. But so they've been doing this, and they've just been shuffling in these guys that you know are never going to get more than two at-bats in the major league team, because if Gomes or Perez actually had gotten hurt in the last couple of years, they were going to sign another catcher, which they did.
Yeah.
In at least one case. So you knew they were never going to play. They were just in AAA just as placeholders. And now you have Eric Haas and Francisco Mejia both in AAA. To have a placeholder there as well would make no sense. So they completely outright cut Ryan Hannigan, even though he probably would have stayed if they wanted him to. And that made me – I like that. That shows – that's what they should be doing. And now you run into then the problem at first base of Bobby Bradley having played a full season in AA and played the AFL.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit well in the AFL.
Yeah.
And Nelly Rodriguez, who can't go down – and Eric Haas and Francisco Mejia. So you have four guys for three positions.
Right.
So yep. Now if Mike Napoli decides he wants to stay, you have four guys who you really want to see, or at least three guys you really want to see, and Bradley, Mejia, and Haas. They're all – at this point, we make – if you call Haas – or if you call Mejia a prospect still, even though he's played in the majors for a minute – they're all top 10 Indians prospects.
Yep.
That's three of the best Indians prospects there are, especially among hitters. They're very possibly the three best hitters in the whole system.
Correct.
And you want all of them to play every single day if you can in the minors, and you're going to throw Napoli into that mix and Nelly Rodriguez, and now all of a sudden you're going to be throwing away at bats on two guys who really probably shouldn't be getting any.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean – you know, again, as sort of been the theme the last couple of podcasts, and we'll have more, radio shows, you know, we'll have more to talk about next weekend or next week, hopefully. But, you know, these are good problems to have. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the 24th, 25th
well, no, and I say it's
guys
much,
on
well,
the
no,
roster.
I'm talking specifically about at-bats at AAA, and somebody got mad at me when they signed Michael Martinez, and luckily, and I will say luckily, he got hurt, and people got mad when I say things like that, too. But they should not have signed Michael Martinez because you have all these guys in AAA, Tyler Krieger, Yu-Chang Chang. We want to see these guys play every day. These are very interesting players. And by saying that I shouldn't get upset by them signing Michael Martinez because he's not going to get MLB at-bats, well, then you're insulting Yu-Chang Chang. Because
right.
I think Yu-Chang Chang and Eric Stametz should all – I think they all should be playing every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Yandy Diaz is going to be in AAA. So
yeah.
You have a lot of really, really interesting players there. If you're in Columbus, this is going to be the best Clippers team in years.
Yeah.
It's really an incredible team out there. And they're going to have a lot of those pitchers coming up from the AA squad. Or last year, the Lynchburg Hillcats had just a devastating rotation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those guys got promoted mid-season, like Xiaoqing Chiang, Matt Esparza, and Shane Bieber in particular.
Yeah.
Those three guys should all be in Columbus this year. And I'm going to tell you, that's going to be a lot more fun than watching Travis Banwart and Jared Groob.
Well, we've talked about it before, about how, you know, Columbus always needs that extra push to win its International League championships. And
I think this is a championship quality team. I think with just the minor leaguers.
Yeah. I also, too, I think the AAA championship series is in Columbus this year too. Oh, so it is. So they have a lot riding on the line. And I tell you what, Columbus is hungry for baseball. I went to a couple Clippers games last year, and the stands were packed. And you know, it's a fun thing for people in Columbus to do when the Buckeyes aren't playing. But you know, we talked about this. Remember, I can't think of any names, but you know, the Indians would sign, you know, guys to minor league deals, you know, veteran guys that have been around for a while that were good veteran guys that really didn't have a spot on the major league roster. And they'd just sit in Columbus and just wail away and help Columbus win championships. And so,
And every once in a while, I don't mind. Like, the Richie Schaefer is an interesting one where he's been in the majors. He plays a couple positions poorly. Left field and third base mostly. But he was a guy last year I wanted to see him call up in September. I'm not complaining about Richie Schaefer. I like guys like that. I like guys that maybe there's something left there. Because you do have those stories like David Ortiz back in the day. There's guys like that, like Jesus Aguilar. You know, Jesus Aguilar is dumped from the Indians. He has a great season for Milwaukee, and he's back there again this year.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him the other day get 3 hits in a game. I'm so excited when I see Jesus Aguilar come up. I have to watch those at bats so closely because I don't know if there's ever been a player I've irrationally loved so much.
Yeah. Has Yandy Diaz basically been – is he the new Jesus Aguilar?
You mean as far as the Indians being treating him that way?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Because we know for the Indians' top prospects, all right, we know how delicate that the Indians treat these guys. I mean, we saw it with Lindor. But yet, Yandy Diaz, you know, bounced back and forth.
Well, they did that with Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Although Jose was a little younger.
That's a good point.
He was younger when they signed him. But it could be, although I think Diaz is probably better than Jesus Aguilar, ultimately. I think he'll have more of a major league career than him.
Yeah.
But again, whenever we're talking about prospects, you're always going to have most of them will flame out. I just think about the sheer volume of teams they have. They had 9 teams last year, minor league teams last year, and they're going to have 9 again this year. They're going to expand the AZL to 2 teams. I think the DSL is going to go back to 1. But they're going to have 2 AZL teams this year because they had 2 DSL teams last year. So all those guys are coming up.
Yeah.
That's a lot of – so only if you changed out the entire Indians rosters every year, only one of those teams would make it. Everybody – all the other players would fail. But you're not. You're keeping the major leaguers around for at least 5-6 years each.
Right.
So 99% of these minor leaguers – and I just made that up. It's probably wrong – are going to fail out. So even when we're talking about the top of the top minor leaguers, you know, your Bobby Bradleys and Yu Chang Changs and Eric Haas's and Francisco Mejia, maybe one of those guys, maybe 2 of them become major league starters and 1 of them's an all-star. You don't know. So you need a lot of talent to get one good player out of the group.
Right.
We can always talk about Cord Phelps and Jason Kipnis.
Cord Phelps.
If you don't remember, that's when we started Burning River Baseball.
Yep.
We didn't do as much minor league stuff as we have in the past few years, but we did a little bit. And I remember the first prospects we were looking at were Cord Phelps and Jason Kipnis coming up.
Yeah.
And it was
back
all this
2011.
Big, that was probably some of your first articles, I think, were comparing the two and saying which one of these guys is going to make the – which one is going to be the guy? And it was really 50-50 until they came up to the majors and worked out which one was going to be the guy. Right. And I think Tyler Krieger and Mark Mathias almost have that same type of thing coming up now, where right now, if you asked me to pick one, I don't think I could. I guess I'd pick Krieger because I've seen him more, but Mathias has been hurt a little more. But I mean, if both of them come up and play at some point, then they can separate themselves out, and maybe we'll look back and say, oh, I can't believe we considered them equals at some point.
Yeah. But, well, I remember because I remember, man, you're bringing back a whole bunch of memories for me because Cord Phelps, like, he had, I think, more power than Kipnis.
Well, Kipnis doesn't have much power. Yeah, he probably did.
Yeah, because I want to say the year before he came, I think he hit like 15 bombs or something like that at Columbus, or might even have been Buffalo at the time. I don't know. I mean, we're going way back. I think it might have been Buffalo. He hit like 300, something like that. I mean, he was a decent prospect.
Yeah, and that's why you need a lot of guys. You need a lot of high level prospects to look at. So you get the opportunity to choose between them. You can't just put all your eggs in one basket and say this is the guy. And that's why it kind of sucks when you run out of options. But again, the reason these guys are running out of options, Merritt and Ruff Snyder and Ursula and Gonzalez, the reason they are all out of options is because the Indians are so good. Yep. If the Indians were not this good, then they would just be on the roster. Mm-hmm. It's because that there's only room for them for a couple games at a time. When someone gets hurt, there's room for them. That they mm-hmm. haven't been able to break in. Can you imagine? I mean, when the Indians were throwing Jeremy Bonderman and Jeremy Sowers.
Oh, yeah. And who was the guy that had diabetes?
Yeah, that was Bonderman, wasn't it?
No, it was Jason Johnson, I think.
Oh, Jason. Yeah, when they were throwing those guys out on the mound, and if they had Ryan Merritt, he could have been the ace.
Yeah.
But now the team is so much better, that's why they have these problems. That's why you have these problems within the system. They had a couple really good drafts going back pretty much to, like, the Kipnis draft, which was, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, they had four or five drafts in a row that were really good, and those guys are now coming up. And they had some free agent signings like Mejia that were really good, and those guys are coming up to the point where they're ready to break through the major leagues. And you're like, well, too bad. There's no room for you. We have all these guys that we signed forever.
It's crazy. Yeah, you bring up great points because if you think about it, in my opinion, Ryan Merritt is better than Aaron Laffey. And Aaron Laffey was an integral part of the 2007 team that nearly went to the World Series and would have won the World Series that year.
Yeah, I mean,
think about it. That's crazy.
If it was back then, we'd be talking about these guys being the rotation of those teams could have been like Justin Masterson and then Adam Plutko, Julian Merriweather, Sean Morimondo, and Ryan Merritt. Like that could, you'd been pretty happy with that rotation back then.
Yeah.
So it is fun. Enjoy it, I guess. I'll enjoy Corey Kluber.
Justin Masterson retired, didn't he?
Yes.
Dang, that's crazy to me.
He's been gone for a while, I think.
And to consider that, I mean, Masterson would be battling for the final spot in the bullpen this season if he was on this roster.
I don't think
about
so.
It. He would be in that mix. Of course, I'm digressing.
No, but they have Alexei Ogando.
I remember the Red Sox. The Red Sox were bounced. Remember the Red Sox bounced them around between closer and starter. Yeah. And of course, you know, like usual, I'm usually years ahead of any trends. Like for instance, you know, I wanted CeCe Sabathia to be the closer for so many years, but not use him as just a one inning closer, but have him come in blowing gas in the eighth inning. And of course, you know, 10 years later, that's when baseball all of a sudden moves to, specialists, relief aces in the bullpen. Of course, I was 10 years ahead of my time, as I usually am.
Incredibly wrong.
No,
you would
I wasn't.
Have wasted so many good innings. I don't want to have this discussion again.
Anyway, Justin Masterson, I think, would have been a dominant closer. Dominant. But I digress.
Yeah, that's what you do 10 years ahead.
Yeah. Think about it. I am well ahead of my time as far as baseball trends are concerned.
I think you're stuck in the 1860s.
I am not stuck in the 1860s. Can you have imagined CeCe coming out blowing gas in like the 7th?
Yeah, you would have lost 4 innings of baseball that he could have pitched.
That's not necessarily like
Justin,
because you
Justin
had
Justin Verlander would be a great closer too.
Yeah, of course
you
want to
lose the other 7 innings that he was going to pitch.
But see the difference is the Astros already have a closer. The Indians didn't have a closer back then.
The closer is not important.
If you consider Chris Perez a closer.
The closer is not important. It does not matter.
No, but relief aces are. A la Andrew
They
Miller.
Are less important than just about anybody else out there.
They are not. They are not. If you study advanced metrics, they all tell you the same thing, that the higher leveraged innings are usually between the sixth and the eighth innings. So, I don't know what, I mean, see, I left you speechless.
Yeah.
What's your problem? You can't have dead air like this. I can't just continue to talk over you.
This is such a silly discussion. That's why
it is not a silly discussion.
I told you I'm reading Jay Jaffe's book. Have you read that yet?
No, I haven't.
Cooperstown Casebook. Actually, no, it was.
No, I'm waiting. The next book I'm waiting for is that book on the shift. I can't remember who. I pre-ordered it. I can't remember who wrote it.
Did you read Keith Law's Smart Baseball?
No, I didn't.
Okay. He's got a thing in there about relievers, too, about how they're completely overrated.
Yeah, but Keith Law doesn't even know what day it is.
Okay, you're gonna insult him now?
Don't forget, he's writing for ESPN for a reason, and there's a reason why he's not a talent evaluator or a GM for a major league team. Don't forget that.
But he used to be. He used to work. He was in the front office with the Blue Jays. I mean, like, that's what people insult him.
They had amazing success with the Blue Jays. Amazing success. He did a hell of a job with the Blue Jays.
I can't believe that you're insulting one of the most advanced writers in baseball.
Okay, there you go. Advanced writer. Not advanced talent evaluator.
Did you just do a heel turn on me?
What do you mean?
Are you going anti-Saber?
No, I'm not going anti-Saber. But just because a writer at ESPN states something doesn't necessarily mean it's gospel truth.
It's not just one guy. I'm just using him as the prime example of the person who said this recently.
Well, still, it doesn't matter. I'm right, he's wrong.
You are a nutter.
I am not a nutter.
I got to put you to bed.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it's already past 1 o'clock. But I'll leave you with this. All right.
In the morning,
I'll leave you with this. Tonight. No, where would the Indians be without Allen and Miller in the bullpen? So if you want to say that relievers don't mean anything,
I never said okay, but again, we've had this discussion before. Miller cannot start. He tried to. He failed at it. If he could start, he would be much more valuable as a starter because he'd be getting 200 innings instead of 70. That's not arguable. He would be much more valuable getting 200 innings a year than 70. Just like in Allen's the same thing. If he could pitch 200 innings a year, he would. He would be their number two pitcher probably after Kluber. Hmm. There's no question that Kluber is more valuable than both of them. By a million. Carrasco is more valuable. Trevor Bauer is more valuable than both of them. 200.
Now, for me,
200 is way too much. You're putting too much emphasis on the late innings, which are not that important. They're not more important than any other inning. Every inning is equally important.
You're putting way too much emphasis on the fact that starters pitch very low leveraged innings. That really don't mean anything when it comes to the outcome of the game. If you're pitching from the sixth or seventh inning on, there's a good chance that the game is still in the balance at that point. Because don't forget, there's no clock in baseball.
The game is still in the balance in the first inning.
You need 27 outs. So just because you're up five to nothing.
If you give up five runs in the first inning, your chances of winning have dropped dramatically.
Right. Well, tell that. I mean,
it's
tell
the same.
That to.
If you give up five runs in the first inning or five runs in the eighth inning, it's still five runs. It's not like they count – you don't get bonus runs in the late innings.
Yeah, well, tell it to Joe Madden, okay, who basically blew the Rays' chance of winning the World Series against the Phillies when he left David Price in there too long.
This is a completely different discussion, though.
All right.
You're a fool. Everybody knows it. I don't know if
– Or what about him going to What about him going to Aroldis Chapman in Game 6 of the 2016 World Series when they were up by 6-7 runs?
Yeah, he was copying off of Francona.
Right.
He's like, hey, that guy's working.
Don't you think that Joe Maddon has a little bit more baseball common sense than, say, Keith Law?
No, honestly, I don't.
Oh, okay.
But, all right. But again, that's a completely different situation. You're talking about who's more valuable on the entire season, and then you just switched it to who you would leave in the game. If a pitcher is struggling, then he's struggling. It doesn't matter if overall he's a more valuable pitcher. I mean, if Felix Hernandez is having a bad day, you pull him. Pedro Martinez is considered the best pitcher of our lifetime, which I don't necessarily consider him that, but when he went in the Hall of Fame, they talked about him like he was. And I've seen arguments that he was since then that are pretty strong. And there were games that he was left in much too long. But that doesn't mean he wasn't the most valuable pitcher of our lifetime, just because they left him in a little too long in a couple games.
Mm. All right. Whatever.
All right. Good night, silly.
Good night, sweet pants.
Yeah, we'll catch you next week. Hopefully we'll have some more roster news, some actual news, and some actual baseball games in Seattle coming up. They're playing in a dome. I'm assuming it's going to be snowing on the Indians' home opener, which is April 6th. I think they do that on purpose so that all those tickets then get absorbed in other games, and it makes the other games look like they had higher attendances.
We didn't get a chance to talk about this, but can you briefly please explain the reasoning behind the Indians having 17 home games in April?
Everybody likes them.
What is the point in that? Why? Why would you schedule a team that plays in Cleveland?
Well, they're playing the Tigers.
17 home games in the month of April.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd play the Mariners and Blue Jays at home, but the Tigers and Cubs, it doesn't really make a difference.
Well, it doesn't make a difference on those teams, but, I mean, you've got some teams, obviously, that play southern climates and in domes, and, it just doesn't make any – it just makes no sense to me whatsoever, and it only does a disservice
– I would blame the computers.
It only does a disservice to the Indians.
Blame the computers.
I mean, okay, so they they play a majority of their games against the Central. I get that. Okay, so Kansas City.
We could talk about this next episode. We already ended this episode. You're going on forever.
Yeah, I'm trying to rant and rave about this, though.
Yeah, we don't need to rant.
All right,
put it on Twitter where you're not anymore.
Okay.
Everybody follow Mike on Twitter and talk bad about him because he's not checking it anymore. So
I check it once a week.
I don't even know. You changed your username, right? I don't even know what it is anymore.
Mike, no, it's still Mike.
No, that's not what it was before. Now it's Mike Milleragno 22. So follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
And say very nasty, dirty things at him. He likes it.
All right. Good night, sweet pants.
All right. We'll catch you guys next week. Bye-bye.